by calling 866-628-2277.
FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
The only good Indian is a dead Indian.
Welcome to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Rhonda, your host here for the next hour. The next half hour, I'll be doing your news across Indian country, so make sure you stay tuned for that as well. We're also going to be having a special guest on the air as well. That'll be Miss Karen Eagle. She will be talking about the Lakota 57 trial that went on this past week in Rapid City, South Dakota. So make sure you stay tuned for that, being about 5 minutes. We'll get started with some music, and we got some Redbone. You're listening to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. night when you're listening to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And like I said, we're having a special guest on the show today talking about the Lakota 57 trial that concluded this past week in Rapid City, South Dakota. Ms. Karen Eagle is here on the line with us. Karen, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing, Rhonda?
I'm doing fine. All right. Well, if you want to explain, I guess the background of what the Lakota 57 trial is about to some of our listeners who may not know what exactly is going on in Rapid City.
Okay. Back in January of this year, January 24th to be exact, a group of Lakota students from the Pine Ridge Reservation came to Rapid City, which is about a 90-mile trip one way, to attend a Rapid City Rush hockey game. The Rush hockey is a hockey team is part of the East Coast Hockey League, and so they're the closest thing we have to a professional sports team here in Rapid City. The kids earned the trip to the game through an after-school program called the 21st Century. And what that is an after-school program that helps kids pull ahead in some of their classes and just a mentoring/tutoring type of program, cultural-based. And so the kids that were in attendance were the kids that had worked really hard and had excelled with their attendance and their grades. And so they get to Rapid City, and they're at the hockey game having a really good time. And throughout the game, apparently a group of white males were in a VIP box right behind the kids above them. And so there was some interaction apparently between the kids and that party that was in the suite. And for the most part, the interaction was positive. One of the men had, you know, some nice words exchanged with the kids, but that party in the VIP box where they were drinking, in fact, it was the local Budweiser distributor that owned that box. And so these were his customers that he distributes alcohol to their restaurant. The evening progressed, and by the third quarter of the game, there was more interaction between the kids and the people in the suite, and it really quickly turned negative. It sounds, according to some of the testimony at the trial this week, there was, beer tabs and the bottle tops that were thrown down on the kids. According to the people in the suite, the alcohol was spilled out onto the children, but according to them, it was by accident in the quote-unquote celebratory movement. They were spraying alcohol around. And the children, of course, were pretty well soaked with some of that alcohol. And in fact, one of the children had alcohol come down while she was looking up, and it got into her mouth, and it was pretty traumatic for the kids. There was a verbal exchange where the children were told, you know, you need to cheer louder because you're from the reservation, and then progressed to, you know, go back to the reservation and things along that line. So, it was pretty negative for those children at that point. The reports came out, the incident was reported to people there at the facility, and the police were contacted a few days later, and it took nearly 3 weeks for some of the interviews to be done with the children. And so, a good amount of time went by before the cops were even able to talk with the kids. And so what we were looking at was a lot of the parents and a lot of the outreach community members were hoping to see an indictment come down that included a hate crime under a federal statute, and because of the fact that children were involved, and or at least some type of assault charge, if not a child abuse or a child endangerment charge. And what actually was handed down indictment-wise was one individual was identified from the speech, Mr. Trace O'Connell of Phillips, South Dakota, and he was, the indictment against him was for a disorderly charge conduct under the city statute in Rapid City. And so that's the trial that was held this past 22nd and 23rd of July.
And so this is already the end of July. And excuse me again, we're talking with Karen Eagle, and she is at the Pine Ridge. She's from the Ogallala Lakota tribe, and she is talking about the Lakota 57 trial that was going on this past week in Rapid City. She lives in Rapid City, and she attended the trial that was going on. And so when this all happened, you know, I read accounts of they didn't even get to finish out the game. They didn't even get to see the entire game, that they left before the game. That's how bad it got.
Yeah. They left at the end of the third quarter, a closely contested game that night. The Rapid City Rush ended up losing, I believe, in one overtime. But it was a pretty close, and reportedly it was a really exciting game, and the kids had been enjoying it up until that time when the interaction between the kids and the sweet party had gotten a little more negative.
Okay.
So yeah, they did leave. They walked out and they went straight back to the reservation.
Yeah, and you know, especially for a fun, exciting, rewarding type trip, for it to end this way, I mean, that has to be so disappointing to these kids to have it end this way. I mean, it's especially for young children, because to me, I think that leaves a really bad impression on their minds of you know, what going to an event like this should be. You know, it should be fun, and to have it end in such a bad way is you know, not a good thing. So you were at the trial. And kind of tell us what the atmosphere was like at the trial.
Well, the trial itself was not held at the Pennington County Courthouse in Rapid City. It was held at an old school building that's been converted to another, the Rapid City Second High School, or Third High School, I'm sorry. And they have a historic theater in there, in that building. And so for whatever reason, we're thinking that they had anticipated a lot more community members and from Philip, and probably a lot more people coming from the reservation to support the kids. And so they held it there in their theater, in the historic theater. And so it was a little unsettling, because the setting itself was not typical, and people, it just didn't feel like a trial, a real trial. And so I think that's kind of, that set the tone. But what really kind of confused people was the fact that the prosecutor of the trial was actually the city's own attorney. And he does have prosecutorial powers, but a few days prior to the trial beginning, a notice to file a civil lawsuit had been served on the city of Rapid City, which named Rapid City and numerous other entities, including Trace O'Connell, the defendant of this trial, as co-defendant. And so we had anticipated that there would be some change of the prosecution due to that conflict that was brought after that filing, and there was it proceeded with him, and we, those of us who were aware of this, we were just kind of baffled. We were really concerned that this prosecutor, you know, we wondered if he would even, how effective would he be in his job as prosecutor when he was looking at across the table at his own co-defendant.
Yeah.
And so I was able to obtain a copy of a letter that the city's attorney, his name is Joel Landine. I was able to get a copy of a letter that he wrote in response to the notice to file, and in it he says in very plain language that he didn't believe that the suit had merit because he has statements from students and staff that would be able to prove that there was no racism and there was no assault that occurred that evening. And the only place that he would be able to get those statements is through this prosecution of Trace O'Connell.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had that concern, and to be really, really honest, having been involved with this case from basically the night that it occurred, there was very little hope that this was going to have come with any sense of justice for the children.
Yes.
2 weeks prior to the trial, the judge heard testimony from two defense witnesses, and none of the parents or the children or anybody on that side were notified and able to even be present for that testimony. And the judge himself actually, under the city statute, the penalty for this disorderly conduct, which is a Class 2 misdemeanor, would be $500 fine and 30 days in jail, in the county jail. And he immediately, before even hearing any testimony presented by the prosecution, removed the possibility of the jail time from any possible sentencing. And so there is a lot of things that chipped away at the confidence in the judicial system here in Rapid City. And so it was, I think people were sitting in the courthouse with a lot of trepidation and maybe even a defeated attitude. That was pretty heavy in the room. So
that's terrible. Yes,
it is.
Again, we're talking with Karen Eagle, and she lives in Rapid City, South Dakota. She is a member of the Oglala Lakota tribe in South Dakota, and she's discussing the Trace O'Connell trial, where he allegedly dumped beer on these students who had taken a trip to a hockey game in Rapid City. And basically, the court case seems like it's just a kangaroo court. I just don't know how to describe it all, but I also have another guest in the studio with me. His name is Mari Spala, and he's also a member of the Oglala Lakota tribe as well. And he actually was born in Philip, and so Maury's here too. He wanted to be here and talk about this case, because we talked about it when it first happened, specifically about the racism that occurs in Rapid. Maury, did you have anything to add?
Hello, Karen.
Hello, how are you?
Yes, I'm a member of the Oglala Sioux tribe or Oglala Lakota tribe. I was born in Philip. I was raised in Rapid City, so I'm well aware of these types of situations that occur, and it's just disheartening because I've been living in Kansas for so many years, and to hear stuff like this still happening, I don't even know what we can do. You know, bringing outside help, like I didn't know if you were involved with like the NAACP involvement, but I heard they kind of backed out. I didn't know if you had any more information on that. But, yeah, it's just really disheartening because I still have a lot of family that live in Rapid City. And I just worry about them, you know, because something like this can occur, maybe even something worse, and it may be overlooked. And so that's why, you know, all the way here in Kansas, I worry about, you know, our people living in those areas.
Did you have any other help from the NAACP, Karen? Or do you know of any?
I think we got a very huge letter of support from the Martin Luther King Center. Mm-hmm. And that letter actually came directly from his daughter, Bernice, mm-hmm. her name is. And so that letter actually opened the door for us. We've gotten a lot of support from different organizations, but the majority of them were waiting for the outcome of this this trial and to see what the next step would be. Unfortunately, what happened Thursday was the second day of the trial, when the defense were supposed to present their defense. They called no witnesses. They offered no evidence. They went straight into their closing, and the judge told the court that he would take 3 to 6 weeks to make his decision on the verdict.
Wow. Was the defendant even there?
He was there for that, for the closing. He was never there for the prosecution's presentation. And so this was the first time that, you know, all of the status hearings and, since January, this is the first time that any of us attached to this case have ever seen him in person. So we were kind of surprised, but and we were actually more surprised that he was never actually required to be at any of the. He didn't even have to be there that day on Thursday, according to what we were told. So it was really interesting to witness that, and when we walked out of the court, the theater, we were very shocked. Very, very shocked that he at what the judge had decided, that he was going to take that 3 to 6 weeks to decide on a misdemeanor charge. And I'm seriously kind of still baffled about that, but we're thinking that he might have decided to hold off on any kind of a verdict because of the big, huge Sturgis bike rally that kicks off in a week here. So, I think it might be more of a PR move for them rather than a move towards justice.
Wow, that's terrible. They're looking at the commercial interests of things going on instead of the interest of young children here. We're talking with Karen Eagle, and she's a member of the Oglala Lakota people, and lives in Rapid City, South Dakota, and she attended the trial of the Lakota 57, and it's the trial of Trace O'Connell, who allegedly dumped beer on children, and exchange of words and things going on. It's really put a damper on the kids wanting to even go to Rapid City. Is there... Do they not want to come to Rapid City anymore now from the reservation?
That's been a problem, is getting some of the family members to come and even want to come to for the trial. We had one of the more vocal parents of the children, Angie Sam. She spoke earlier in the case. She was identified by the rest of the parents as somebody who could speak on their behalf. Mm-hmm. And her 13-year-old daughter Robin was there, and she just refused to come. It was too much for her, and that's perfectly understandable. I can honestly say I don't know if I would have the fortitude to show up myself. And so I really do commend the parents and the children who did show up, and the children who testified they were just so authentic and so real. As children can be. I mean, it's just natural for them. And I think that they did such a wonderful job, and they really do need to be commended, and those parents and families that supported them enough to get them to that point where they felt okay to come. And, I've told this to many people. I cannot believe that I would say these words, but I really do commend the defense attorney, Mark Butler, for the way that he handled the cross-examination of the children. Mm-hmm. And actually, he might have been the only professional attorney that was on that stage those 2 days. And so it's, as hard as it is for me to bite back any resentment, I really do have to commend him for his, he was very, very good with the kids. And I think that that helped them a lot, too. So,
Definitely, yeah. And one other thing I noticed that you'd been talking about on Facebook was the amount of support that has been coming out for these children's for at American Horse. But I noticed that you had said there was certain fundraisers going on, and so you wanted to make sure that the legitimate people raising funds for these children, people knew about them.
And unfortunately, I had anticipated that early on, that there would be people who were, this is kind of cash cow moment where they could fundraise and, jump on people's sympathies over this. And it happened. There is a Facebook page that we created with the parents, and it's called The Lakota 57. There's another one. I think the title of it is I Support the Lakota 57. Mm-hmm. And the only problem that the parents have with that is that nobody from that page has been forthcoming with information on where the fundraising is geared, the funds that are solicited, where do they go to and who has access to them. And, the families that did come up with their kids, had to rely on other people's help to get them up here. And that should not be the case when they have, people are letting us know that us, and I mean us by the people that are working face to face and hand in hand with the parents. They're telling us of $5,000 donations and $100 here and $100 there. And so there's money somewhere, and it should be going towards families to help them get their, get their kids to where they need to go. They need to pay for somebody to come in and do some really intense counseling with the kids. That hasn't happened yet. And so we started this page, and it's a community page. It's open to everybody, and we're promoting it very aggressively as the only page that's sanctioned by the families, the actual families of the American Horse School kids. We have an artist named Joey Montoya who he came up with a design with a young Lakota child with a feather in their hair, and it says "Protect the Sacred." And that's something. The design is pretty similar to the Black Kilda Not for Sale design shirt, and so we've got that going where we're going to be selling t-shirts online. Right now I think it's under Lakota57.com. That's where you can find the link to order those shirts. So all of the funds that are generated off those t-shirts, and they're $30 plus shipping and handling, every single dollar goes to a fund that is accessible by an attorney and one parent that was selected. And all of the bank statements are open for the parent to view at any time that they want to. So we're trying to really push this for transparency and accountability, and we just want the kids and their families to have the help that their people are trying to help them, and I think that's wonderful, and we want to make that happen in the right.
All right. Well, I'll help. Publish that information as well and share it on Facebook to make sure that everybody knows, where they can do to support this. We're talking with Karen Eagle, and she is a member of the Oglala Lakota tribe and lives in Rapid City, and she attended the trial of Trace O'Connell, who was involved with this Lakota 57 where beer was spilled on children at a hockey game. And the trial went on this week, and it's only over a misdemeanor, a disorderly conduct. And so the maximum amount he can be, have to pay is $500. The judge took off the time that he would have to serve in jail, which would have been 30 days, but he said that's not what is going to happen. And they haven't given the verdict yet. He said it would take between 3 and 6 weeks. So that trial is... still ongoing, and so I'm sure we'll get more updates. But it's a travesty to see that children, any children, would be subject to any type of harm this way, and then be treated this way and have to go through a court hearing like this to defend themselves and, you know, say something that, that happened wrong to them. And it's a terrible story. It's a terrible story. Maury, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, I just was really interested, and I don't know if Karen has this information, but I was wondering if the tribe, you know, pretty much was sending representatives up and supporting them as well, because it's not only an attack on our community, but our children, you know, and they should be stepping up and, I believe, sending representatives up there. So I didn't know if she had any information on that.
Yes, we had a council representative from their district, which is the Pass Creek district, mm-hmm. and his name is James Cross, and he's been pretty much a rock for a lot of the family,
mm-hmm.
You know, really being aggressive and assertive in making sure that their rights are protected. He's been stepping forward, you know, even with those of us who are, you know, making it, this is kind of our mission to help the kids and the families. He keeps us on task. He's doing exactly what he needs to be doing by protecting the rights and the best interests of those kids. So I really, really admire his presence, and I, you know, we've come to rely on him to offer some really good guiding words. And he wasn't sent by the tribal council, but he took it on as part of his leadership role.
Mm-hmm.
As a representative, but the tribe itself has been very supportive as far as, you know, maintaining that that something needs to be done, and that they're, you know, again, it really came down to a lot of people were waiting this trial out, because there's so many other things that we can do, like filing, you know, ethics complaints against various people, you know, various attorneys that are involved in the case, and especially Mr. Joel Landine. We're looking at, you know, getting with the ACLU, different organizations that have just been kind of taking a hands-off approach until the criminal phase was complete. And so we're waiting still to take the next step forward. And I think that it's really frustrating for us. You know, we kind of want to fast track and get, you know, things going, especially with the parents who are just, you know, they just want to help their kids move forward and move on from this. But we're back in a waiting period right now. But we do have some really good things that are coming down in the meantime, with the next, you know, three weeks, actually. I mentioned that it's kind of the general consensus that the city is holding this off so that we can get past the Sturgis rally, because they don't want another black eye.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's going to be there has been for the past 3 years a spirit run that went through Sturgis during the rally and concluded out at Fair Butte. And it was just done quietly, and it was just a prayerful event. But this year we'll be a little bit more assertive in the fact that we're going to be, you know, taking the kids out with us, and then we're going to be handing out pamphlets to the bikers who just kind of, you know, they really have an actual interest in the Native culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they stop and, you know, ask us what we're about and what we're doing, we're going to have, you know, leaflets on hand to let them know what this case is about, and that the fact that we're still waiting on any type of justice to come for the kids. So, there's just things like that we're doing, and we're keeping everything as positive as possible for the kids. And I think everything's been pretty much coming together because the kids have always been the focus.
Mm-hmm.
And any monetary donations that were, you know, that are being solicited are actually going to go straight to the families and address any of the needs that they have. And so, we're trying to keep it very positive. And actually, what we want to do is we're trying to bring the attention that this didn't just happen to those children. This happens to
to a lot of the Native kids in Rapid City and in the surrounding border towns, all the reservations in South Dakota and in North Dakota. You know, there's this horror stories of what, you know, some of the our youngest relatives have to witness and hear and the trauma that they go through, and, you know, all because of racism. And we want that to stop. No child needs to deal with that type of thing when they're growing.
Definitely. And Karen, also, I met Karen through the Unity Journalists for Diversity, and I sit on the board for Unity Journalists for Diversity, and Karen helped organize a program out there in Allen, South Dakota, working with the American Horse Kids, bringing out Lalo Alcaraz and Ricardo Cate and Russell Contreras. I took three students with me and was able to see the students and have them do a cartooning session with Lalo. Lalo is a renowned cartoonist. He's going to be launching a big show coming next year on Fox called Border Town. So, you know, these kids got some great lessons from not only Lalo, but Ricardo as well. And just to have fun, and they had all the stuff donated to them, and Karen was very instrumental in getting that off the ground. So you need to be commended as well for helping these kids move forward.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. That was really important to me, because what led to that event was, you know, I I'm a journalist, and I worked with some of the local native newspapers, and it was. It was frustrating for me to hear the parents say, "Well, I want the public to know this, but I really don't know how to say it, and I don't know how to. Why aren't the national people paying attention to what happened to our kids?" And it got to me that there's only so much that I could do, and that, you know, I could tell their story for them, but nothing would be more poignant and meaningful than if they would tell it to people themselves. And so Russell Contreras and Russell is I had just met him, and he had just been named the new president of Unity, and that was he jumped on it and got the ball rolling, and really helped guide me to bring that type of empowerment to that community. And it's kind of snowballed. I get requests almost every week from different reservations and other small Native communities around Indian country saying, "Well, can we have something like that here? And how would we do that?" And I'm actually looking at maybe creating some type of an organization where that we can, you know, put those people in contact with the journalists in their communities. And you know, we could just all help each other and just come and show up like how you did, Rhonda, and, you know, and brought journalism students and people who are, you know, either working or working towards that field of work. And it was just amazing. You know, it turned out exactly the way it needed to be. And what came out of it was a lot of the parents that I know were very quietly, you know, more reserved in their community. They've become some pretty vocal advocates for their community, and I think that's just amazing.
It
gives me chills even just to think about it.
It was great fun. I really had a great time. That was my first time being to Allen. Been to Pine Ridge before, but it was first time I've been to Allen. And for my students, it was the first time they'd ever been. Well, except for one of them who lives in northern South Dakota. It was the first time for two of them for ever being there. And they were ultimately changed. They were definitely humbled after going. So, yeah, it was definitely a great event that you put together. And again, you know, thank you for helping these kids out, because that's why it's important to have journalists from different backgrounds talking about these issues, because we're the only ones really talking about it. You know, nobody else is doing this. So, you know, you need to be committed as well.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for being on the show, Karen, and we appreciate it, and explaining what the trial was and what was going on, and, you know, boots on the ground, You know, I know it was difficult seeing your post on Facebook. I could tell that it was a very hard thing to sit through. And I we'll be sending prayers to those kids, and definitely give us an update after the verdict comes down.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much for helping me to push the message of what's going on, what's really going on here. It's really important. I know that some of our families are listening right now, so I want to give out a quick shout out to our Lakota 57 families and to Russell and Lalo, who better be listening.
Yeah, definitely. We'll send prayers out to those families and to those kids as well. Thank you again for being on the show.
All right, thank you very much, Rhonda.
All right. So that was Karen Eagle again. She's one of the people who was in Rapid City at the trial of Trace O'Connell during the Lakota 57, the case of a man who allegedly spilled beer on these kids during a hockey game. And the verdict's not going to come down for 3 to 6 weeks. So, again, we'll probably have her on the show so she can talk about that as well. All right. Well, Maury, did you have anything to add?
I'm just really interested to see where this goes as well. Just like I told you guys before, I grew up in Rapid City, so I know the situation that goes on there, and it's still going on there. I experienced it myself as a kid and as an adult as well. And, you know, I grew up there experiencing that. So, I mean, I just worry about future generations having to go through this. Is there anything that we can do? And, you know, maybe this trial will turn some things around and make some significant changes in how they treat situations like this. So I'm excited to hear what comes out of this in 3 to 6 weeks.
Definitely. All right. Well, I'll do your news as fast as I can. I just realized I don't have that much time. So some of you guys may have seen that members of San Carlos Apache Tribe made their way across the United States to the Capitol this past week. And some of them were even threatened with arrest by a Republican member of Congress. With almost no financial backing, the Apache stronghold left Arizona earlier this month on a 2,000-mile journey to educate the nation about the threats facing Oak Flat, a sacred gathering, ceremonial burial site in Arizona. The trip culminated in a rousing rally in Washington, D.C. To stop the mine, Representative Raul Grijalva, a Democrat from Arizona, introduced H.R. 2811 to save the Oak Flat on June 16th. The bill, which has bipartisan support, repeals a land deal that was inserted into a much larger package that became law in the final days of the last session of Congress. No member of Congress should feel proud or feel like they got away with something by ignoring the needs and rights of the original Americans, he said yesterday. Oak Flat is a sacred place to the Apache people as any other church, temple, synagogue, or mosque is to its congregants across the country. So Rambler, who has been an outspoken opponent of the mine, blamed members of Arizona's congressional delegation for slipping the land swap into the 1,600-page National Defense Authorization Act. She said she would continue to stand up to Senator John McCain and Representative Ann Kirkpatrick, who will be campaigning against each other for U.S. Senate due to their support for the mine. Am I intimidated by McCain? No way, said Rambler, who vowed to do whatever it takes to protect Oak Flat, where her grandmother is buried. Am I intimidated by Kirkpatrick? No way. As chairman of the Senate Armed Force Committee, McCain had direct control of the defense package that included Section 3003. By inserting it into the must-pass bill, Congress avoided controversy over the Southeast Arizona Land Exchange and Conservation Act, a standalone version of the land swap. Intense lobbying from the tribes forced Republican leaders to pull votes on the Southeast Arizona Land Exchange and Conservation Act, not just once, but twice. Ernie Stevens, the chairman of the National Indian Gaming Association, vowed his organization's support for the repeal effort. McCain and Kirkpatrick haven't waded into the controversy despite widespread media coverage of the land swap, but Representative Paul Gosar, a Republican from Arizona, another supporter of the mine, lashed out against the environmental groups earlier this week, accusing them of spreading misinformation. He stated, "In reality, this land exchange does not take any reservation lands. It ensures greater protection for actual sacred tribal lands, will result in environmental protections for 5,000 acres of environmentally sensitive land and requires full environmental compliance before the exchange can be completed. and even maintains tribal access to Oak Flat, Gosar said in a press release. So that was what was going on in D.C., and we'll see what happens with Oak Flat. In Wyoming, the Northern Arapaho Tribe of Wyoming is calling on the Obama administration to launch a hate crimes investigation into the shooting of two of its members in a reservation border town. Stallone Trosper, 29, was shot once in the head as he slept in a detoxification center in Riverton. He was pronounced dead on the scene on Saturday afternoon. A second tribal member, James Sunny Goggles Jr., also was shot in his head. He remains in serious condition in a hospital in Casper after undergoing emergency surgery to remove bullet fragments from his skull. "He is responding to our voices," his sister Rose said Tuesday. "I was holding his hand and reassuring him we were here for him." The alleged assailant has been identified as 32-year-old Roy Clyde, a City Parks employee. Authorities say he admitted he went to Riverton on Saturday with the intent of killing homeless people. But even though Clyde is non-Indian, the victims are Native Americans, authorities are not treating the incident as racially motivated. He has been charged with one count of first-degree murder and one count of attempted first-degree murder, and the tribe is upset with the lack of hate crime charges in this case. So I'm sure we'll hear more information as this case continues. Well, on the Navajo Nation, presidential and vice presidential candidates of the Navajo Nation will no longer have to demonstrate fluency in the Navajo language to run for the office. According to the unofficial results, 52.5% of the voters approved the referendum this past Tuesday to ease the fluency standard for the tribe's top politicians. Over 24,000 people participated in the election, a turnout that did not match the one from the presidential one in April. But the outcome confirmed that tribal members are willing to determine on their own whether presidential and vice presidential hopefuls can speak their language. Last year, a popular candidate was disqualified because he acknowledged that he wasn't as fluent as he wanted to be. Prior tribal law stated that candidates must fluently speak and understand Navajo. With approval of the referendum, the provision now states that candidates must be able to speak and understand a Navajo and English language, and this ability shall be determined by the Navajo voter when he or she casts a ballot. So that was a big news that was going on this past week in Indian Country. All right, well, we'll play a little bit of music here. I believe we got some Native funk for you guys. You're listening to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Yeah!
You're listening to Native Spirit Radio here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Rhonda, and it's about my time to be getting out of here. Sunset Reggae will be coming up for you next. I'll be leaving you off with some Northern Cree. I hope you guys enjoyed the show today with Karen Eagle and Maury Spala. Did you want to say anything? Maury, goodbye.
Thanks for having me on. It's always a great time, great information here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really, I really enjoyed the interview with Karen, getting that information out. I always want to try and get this information spread about the, I just really think it's a travesty that this happened to our kids. Like, how can something like this happen to kids and nothing be done about it? Yeah. A $500 fine.
Exactly.
I mean, if this would have been anybody else's kid, if it had been a governor's kid, a mayor's kid, and it was a Native person who did that to them, it wouldn't be a $500 fine.
Exactly.
It would not have been. But we'll find out the verdict in 3 to 6 weeks. We will let you know. Thanks for listening. And again, have a wonderful week. You'll be listening to some Northern Cree.